passion, drive, and patience. What brings home the winning trophy is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. From superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED lights, and more, whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to turn your car into the MVP and bring home that win. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Here's a sample of a free podcast from the Post Wrestling Cafe. $6 gets you through the door at postwrestlingcafe.com.
As if they don't have too much on their plates, the Kings of Combat Sports Podcast, John and Wade. They talk about the things they did that day. The land of the work of Triple H.
Rewind to SmackDown. Rewind to SmackDown. Rewind to SmackDown. Rewind to SmackDown. Rewind to SmackDown.
Hello, everybody. It is John Pollock and Wei Ting coming at you live and free on a Friday night for a special edition of Rewind a SmackDown.
Hey, John. Wei.
How are you?
I'm doing all right. Yeah. I really need to catch up on sleep.
Oh, okay.
So that's really how I'm doing. But I can usually muster up the energy for like these 2 hours of my day where I'm recording with an audience.
Yeah. What has been the source of the sleep deprivation?
Having to bring my car over to a dealership like 30 minutes away, an hour away through traffic now, like I think 4 times this week. Like it's just been a string of like, you know, I bring it in for one issue, I bring it back, and then they happen to like something else breaks, and then I bring it back again. They tell me that another thing needs fixing, and now pretty much I need to replace the entire AC system. I've also grown pretty wary of this this shop, and I'm actually seeking a second opinion. So anyway, all of that in addition to, of course, Oscar's got a fever, so like had to take him to the doctor today, and just life, you know, life in general.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that you're going through some struggles. I hope that the worst is behind you, and I hope you can get plenty of sleep tonight. So let's all be courteous to Wei tonight. Let's keep those calls brief, and we will get Wei to bed.
You know, it's not happening.
No, it probably is not. But
no, I don't mind it. I certainly don't mind it. It's all part of you know, our routine. Because on Fridays, we take phone calls from the post-wrestling audience in the Post-Wrestling Cafe, also available to our YouTube channel members as well. So if you guys are channel members or patrons, look for the link in wherever you find your exclusive content, basically.
Yes, we're doing a special free preview here of Rewind to SmackDown, which we do each and every Friday night at 10 p.m. Eastern Time. That comes with your postwrestlingcafe.com subscription at all levels, so if you are so inclined, jump onto the cafe because we are going to have lots coming up in the month of July and into August because it is G1 season. And on the Post Wrestling Cafe, we are going to have coverage of all of the G1 shows with our all-star team of hosts that are coming together. Myself, Wei Ting, WH Park, Bruce Lord, Karen Peterson, Kate from Montreal. It's going to be a cavalcade, dare I say. And it would not be complete without, of course, Eric Marcotte, who is kind of the Oleg Bolton of the team that's getting the big push this year. And I think we could see Oleg Bolton in this year's G1, but I promise you will see Eric Marcotte in our G1 coverage this year.
Okay, I wonder how he feels about being... I'm sure he would appreciate that, you know? A big, muscular, good-looking...
He's no Sonata, but I mean, I'm sure he'll take Oleg Bolton.
Yeah. Well. Our first time getting Kate from Montreal as a part of these G1 reviews, so I'm really, really looking forward to that. Yeah. John and I used to do these ourselves, like, just the two of us. John actually used to do it by himself, like, way, way back. He used to cover every G1 show just solo. Then it was me and you for a bit, and then in the year since, with our kind of growing plate of responsibilities attached to a very increasing roster of... wrestling events. Thankfully, we have some incredibly knowledgeable, certainly more knowledgeable than me, people to help us out with some of this G1 coverage. So every show we'll receive coverage and join us along for the ride. It is, from what I hear, the best way to guide you along to the G1. So, yeah.
And when you jump on to the Post Wrestling Cafe, it gives you 30 days of access to the cafe, which comes with all of our extra shows that we do each week, including the Double Shot, which will wind down next Tuesday with episode 4 of Who Killed WCW. And on the G1 front as well, I can also throw out to people that there has been communication made and we have gotten a response back that we are taking off the tarp in the backyard. It's summer season. That means it's time for a pool party. The G1 pool is going to be open for business this coming summer. So stay tuned for that, where we will be doing our G1 Climax picks with all of you able to enter as well and follow along.
Yeah. As you mentioned, John, we got Who Killed WCW now, the finale coming up next week. We also have WH and Rich Fan doing their X-Men rewatch series that, hot takes. I don't know if you heard their thoughts on X-Men Origins Wolverine yet, John.
It was going so well. And then I feel they took quite the, it seemed as though they were finding some middle ground. And I didn't disagree too much with a lot of their assessments in terms of the first half of the film, the second half of the film. And now we are moving on. After you watch X-Men Origins Wolverine, the next one is, what is it? The Wolverine?
Or yeah,
just Wolverine?
The second one, yeah.
Yeah, I'm about halfway through this one.
Wow. I can't believe you're so into this. It takes, so, like, yeah.
I have to put my daughter down to bed every night. So I read her stories. Then I sit with her until she falls asleep. And that could take anywhere from 30 to 40 minutes, where I'm just sitting on her floor waiting for her to fall asleep. So I put my headphones in and I turn on the X-Men movie of the day.
Wow.
And this, the Wolverine, this is basically a James Bond film with Hugh Jackman playing James Bond.
You know, all of these are, it's been a while, but okay, I'll take your word for it.
This is the one set in Japan.
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
In addition to that, of course, it access to the Post Wrestling Cafe gets you access to Rewind Away, the podcast for John and I that started it all. Although for this one, this past week, John was not a part of it because we had to make room for Chris Ely and Nate Milton joining me as we did one of our music album reviews, talking about WrestleMania the album 1993.
If this graphic doesn't sell you on this review.
Oh, come on. You got to listen to some of these songs. Do you have any memories of this album?
None. No, unfortunately not. Like, I knew it existed, but I probably have never sat down and listened to it in my life. But okay, I'm going to listen to this review. I will listen to the review and go through your clips that you have curated.
A lot of great response already from people who have taken the time to listen to this. We actually listen to the album, not as much as we can. Like, some of these songs you don't want to listen to the whole thing. Like, it'll drive you nuts. But get Nate and me and Chris's reactions to such classics as the Slam Jam, the WrestleMania theme, Never Been a Right Time to Say Goodbye by Bret the Hitman Hart, which you know, was in my head all day.
Yeah, and that was actually what was in his head when he was leaving the Bell Center in Montreal.
I think that joke was actually made in the
was it? Podcast. Oh, yeah. Okay. Honest to God, just came to my head.
Mm. All right,
great anyway. Minds.
Mm-hmm. Post Wrestling Cafe plus all the shows that John and I do commercial free. I don't know if people even know about that.
It's one of the many perks that you get: the audio updates, the news updates. It all comes your way. The Post Wrestling Cafe. It's where all the cool people hang out. All right, let's go into a couple of news items here. We're going to start off with Taylor Tooley, who is a one-and-done UFC fighter who competed in UFC 1, but had a much more burgeoning career in Hollywood under his, I guess we can call his working name of Taylor Wiley, who appeared in, well, he had a regular role in the reboots of Magnum P.I. and Hawaii 5-0, also had roles in Forgetting Sarah Marshall, became a, you know, very popular as like a character actor in some of these television series. But, you know, for the purposes of our audience, I mean, he was a sumo wrestler in Japan. He was there for about 2 years and competed, won several tournaments and worked his way up several rankings. He was actually in the same stable as Aki Bono, who died not all that long ago, and then retired in 1989 And when Art Davey was working with Horion Gracie to organize the first UFC event in November of 1993, like, they were looking for all shapes and sizes of people. And it was going to be, you know, Royce Gracie was going to be the Gracie representative. And they wanted, like, it was the idea of getting all the sumos. And you can see based on his size, like, this was going to be a freak attraction where you were going to have, you know, Art Jimmerson with the one boxing glove, and Taylor Tooley was going to be the guy. It was billed as 410 pounds. And he was one of the only fighters that they actually paid a guarantee to, because he negotiated for it. He got everyone else except for him and Art Jimmerson just came in and were competing for the prize money. But Taylor Tooley was able to get a guarantee of $6,000 and then got another $1,000. And this was the first fight on the pay-per-view and kind of set the tone for the night, which that first UFC event, there were no time limits. Like, this thing could have been a disaster for their pay-per-view time, but all the fights ended in pretty quick fashion. And it started with this 26 seconds where his opponent, Gerard Gordeau, famously kicked him right in the face. And Taylor Tooley lost three teeth, one of which Kathy Long joked ended up in her lap. And the other two teeth ended up being dislodged into Gerard Gordeau's foot throughout the rest of the night, when this guy had to fight Kevin Rogier and then went to the finals and lost to Royce Gracie. But this was a fight that I'm sure many people have seen this fight. And I mean, you couldn't have much more of a scene setter than this fight to kind of set the table for what this was. Because if you were watching this on pay-per-view, you're buying this out of sheer curiosity and you don't know what this is. Like, there is the idea, are these worked fights? Are these, like, what are the rules? And you watch this and 26 seconds. Okay, I got it. That's kind of what this was. And so, more so an interesting stat. And like, you can watch UFC 1 and it's just, it's like not even in the realm of what the UFC is today, but it is always interesting to kind of look at, like, what were the building blocks of what this was and what it turned into. And this would have been the first fight you would have seen if you had ordered that pay-per-view that night.
I wonder how surprised he might be that the UFC has grown into what it is today, and that we would, you know, be talking about him in relation to this company that's now bigger than I think anybody would have ever expected upon his very tragic, you know, passing.
Only 56, not an old guy by any stretch. But I mean, most of the coverage, it's all going to focus on his TV and film work. But I mean, there is, you know, a significant portion. I mean, that was his only MMA fight that he ever did, but it was a memorable one. Conor McGregor came out today and finally disclosed what it was that took him out of this UFC 303 fight with Michael Chandler. So I guess Chael Sonnen had gone out and had made some accusations of what Conor is dealing with. And Conor basically just totally denied anything and just showed that he suffered a broken toe. And he put up a photo of his broken toe, also disclosing that he has two fights left on his UFC deal. And I guess there has been at least a lot of fighters that have been very critical of Conor McGregor for pulling out of such a big fight for what they perceive as a very minor injury. But if you are Conor McGregor, you certainly have the ability to know that I'm not going to go into this fight anything less than 100%, as close to 100% as you're going to get after a training camp. And I think he realizes that, you know, for where he is at this point of his career, he's obviously not willing to take any risks there. I mean, there was a time that this guy, when he fought Chad Mendez, I mean, his knee was thrashed for that fight, but he's not in those circumstances anymore. And he can kind of call his shot. And the funny part about this that we've discussed is that, like, if the UFC had the option right now, you could get Conor McGregor to fight next weekend. It's like, we're still going to do this amazing gate next weekend, and we're going to get this Conor fight later. Like, I don't know if they would want Conor McGregor on this card now. It's not like Nevada did have to offer refunds. And to the best of my knowledge, like, this thing's going to be packed next weekend. And I think all the same people that bought tickets are going, and they're going for Alex Pereira and Jiří Procházka. And probably a good portion of them, they'll turn around, they'll spend the same amount of money when Conor McGregor finally fights Michael Chandler. So there you go.
The house always wins.
That's it, man. Like, I don't think the UFC is crying any tears over this particular one as they get set to get $20 million for the Saudi Arabia card that's going down tomorrow, which is interesting because, like, maybe it is because it's been very normalized just through boxing and such. But for this first UFC card in Saudi Arabia, like, I have not detected any of the kind of, you know, moral implications of it. And this is a card, and I don't know if this has to do with Saudi Arabia or if this is by coincidence, but it's very rare. And this is one of the cards that has no female fights on it. And I think that is interesting because I cannot recall the last time there was a UFC card without a women's fight on it. And unlike WWE, I mean, it gets a little more complex if you were given like parameters on what the women could wear in some of these fights. But it is an interesting question, at least to broach about if there were any restrictions on the UFC and how they will the ring card girls be on this card tomorrow. I mean, all these questions, like I'm going to watch this card tomorrow and I'm more interested in just the presentation of it. And does this at all reflect that greatest Royal Rumble? Like what sort of out of the cage promotion and attention are we going to see? Are we going to see prominent Saudi Arabian officials on the broadcast? I mean, all that is kind of interesting. I think it's not everyone's like focus on this, but it is mine. So that's coming up on Saturday, and it'll be on ABC in the afternoon. Way, we have to talk about some ratings. I know that they are, this is always your favorite part of the news pack, but there were two numbers that have come out. We were delayed because of the Juneteenth holiday this week. So NXT, we'll start with NXT on Tuesday night. They did 724,000 viewers, slightly up from the week before, but a 16% increase in the demo to a 0.26. They were first on cable. This was going against the Stanley Cup final, which, by the way, the Edmonton Oilers are 20 minutes away from making this incredible comeback. They were down 3-0 in this series. And if they get through this third period where they are up 3-0, they will force a seventh game on Monday, which is kind of remarkable.
What was the score before?
They were down 3-0 in the series. And now Edmonton, they won the last two games and we're now into the third period. They're up 3-0. So they're about to win three in a row against the Panthers to get a seventh game on Monday, which is insane. Wow. Like that's going to be gigantic in Canada on Monday if they get a seventh game, unless they like Toronto Maple Leaf it here in the third period.
When was the last time a Canadian team won the Stanley Cup?
It would... Well, you had Vancouver that went to the final.
And that was the Riot.
But the last one that won, was it the Montreal? Canadiens? The 93? No. Calgary went to the final. They lost to Tampa. You had Vancouver that went to the final. They lost. It's probably Montreal in 93.
Ah, okay. Yeah. Interesting. 31 years since the Canadian team won the Stanley Cup, and that was when the Canadiens beat the Kings in 93. So, okay. Interesting.
Yeah. I mean, this is the one time that like,
I might even watch this game. Games.
You know what? We could take Raw off. Let's review the hockey game.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So anyway, NXT did a tremendous number up against the Stanley Cup game did, over 4.1 million viewers. And, this was an excellent number for them doing a 0.26. This was their highest 18 to 49 number since November of last year. So, the people believed in Joe Hendry on this show, and that battle royal did do well. So, you know, the intrigue of the surprise, like they didn't know who was going to be in this battle royal, but the surprises obviously worked. And I think that it's a lot of people are talking about like this being a reminder of like, not a whole lot of people are watching TNA, but when you take like some of the ingredients of TNA and they go elsewhere, they're really intriguing, such as we saw when AJ Styles left TNA and he's doing all these numbers on the independents and became way more important outside of TNA than in TNA. Like,
sure.
TNA is doing a 0.01 on Thursdays.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think so much of it is the platform. And I think more so the idea of WWE going outside of their own system to profile talents in pretty like respectable, prominent presentations, you know, outside of their company. The idea of just outsiders coming into the WWE continues to be like a very novel concept, and clearly it's really paid off for them, you know, between Jordan Grace. And I definitely see, like, I'm sure they're trying to think of ways of how they can continue all of this.
And then that takes us to Wednesday night's edition of Dynamite, and this was a disaster. They did 502,000 viewers. I, like many people, assume this was a mistake. It was not a mistake. And a 0.16 in the 18 to 49 demo. So they were down 26% in viewership, 26% down in viewership, 28% down in the key demo. So this was the lowest audience in the history of Dynamite, except for two episodes in 2021 that aired on a Friday night. So for Wednesday night episodes, lowest audience ever and lowest demo ever, including those Friday night episodes. So there are different factors that we can go through. It was a holiday on Wednesday. I'm curious, because you would have a better sense than me, Wei, maybe on your timeline, how much like this Kendrick Lamar concert might have impacted somewhat. I think all of these are somewhat contributing factors, but this entire year, Dynamite has not gone below a 0.23. That's against all this competition, NBA, NHL, different stuff that they've been up against. 0.23 was the lowest, and this week it was a 0.16. So you can come up with all these different reasons, and again, this is, their numbers have been, they've been average. This is well below average, and I would somewhat say, I'm sure there's going to be somewhat of a bounce back next week, but I would not be just dismissing this as coming up with all these reasons. Like, this was a frighteningly low number for Dynamite to attract, and comes at a time when, like, you and I have been very high the last couple of weeks on the quality of the show, but quality and how it performs, they don't always intersect.
They also didn't have Big Bang Theory as a lead-in.
Yes, which Black Panther was the lead-in, and that is going to hurt, like, the beginning of the show, and they started off very low. It's not going to collapse your entire 2 hours either. But that's a factor. It's one that you don't discount either. With not having Big Bang Theory and having a much lower one, by this they still did rank third on cable for the night. The College World Series did a 0.41, and then Expedition Unknown did a 0.18 on Discovery. So, this was a week where NXT not only was ahead in overall viewership and the demo, but NXT also had the tougher night too, with the Stanley Cup. And this, I mean, all this, these decreases come a week after they were going against the NBA finals. Like, this was supposed to be a bounce back week for AEW.
Sure. Is the
tell me fall? Tell me how they fixed this in 30 seconds or less, and exactly what caused this.
Joe Hendry should make an appearance on Dynamite.
They should have gone after Joe Hendry at some point. I've been talking about this guy forever. I think
I mean, is the sky falling? You know, like, do we celebrate a big rating for Dynamite as if, like, you know, the men, like, I don't know, things have been fixed? Whenever you're talking about ratings, we should be talking about trends and patterns, and not really reacting that big over one week occasions. If next week you're seeing a similar rating, then yes, it might be extra cause for concern. This is not good, and continues to perhaps highlight the trend of perception among audiences that NXT is moving up. WWE itself is very hot, and AEW not as much. But a 1 week rating, because of various reasons that I'm sure could be debated, I'm not ready to proclaim anything yet. What should AEW do in response to this, if any?
Well, number one, I certainly would take this as not just a complete outlier to everything. Like, if they were doing all these great attendance figures and TV, like, this was just a total, it's not consistent with anything else. I think you can chalk some of that. I would still be like, again, it was just such a large drop. Like, if this was a 0.21, okay, I'd be very disappointed with that without the NBA, but you just look at it as, okay, there's several factors here. But a 0.16, like, we're not talking the lowest just in the last couple of weeks. We're not talking the lowest of the, we're talking the lowest numbers ever. Think of all the things Dynamite has aired again. Like, they were on the night of the January 6th, like, all of that coverage, and that beat this. Like, think of all the Thanksgiving Eves that they have. This was the lowest ever of all those Wednesday shows. So I would not just cover this up as just excuse making. That said, they're in a very difficult position, because when you are trying to turn things around, you do need a lot of patience. And television numbers are the antithesis of patience. It's like, it's a every week you're focused on this, but you are in a contract year at the same time where, I mean, it is a bit like you can't
you're
have
negotiating
so much,
at the moment.
They're negotiating at the moment. And
if you're already negotiating at the moment, I mean, how
well,
relevant
one bad
is
number
this?
Is not going to harm them, but they're, you are looking at just overall, and you can look each week of where they were 6 months ago, 12 months ago. And yeah, there is a decline. There is also, you know, the realities of television being down, and their ranking continues to still be beyond respectable. Like, this is a number two, number three show. On their worst week ever, they were still number three for the night. So that's worth keeping into consideration. One idea that I have said multiple times for this Forbidden Door pay-per-view that we have coming up, I can guarantee you that whatever that, we have 10 matches on the card at the moment, and it's going to draw what it's going to draw. The addition of an Okada match, the addition of a Young Bucks match on that show, I don't think it's doing any more business with those added matches. And I would seriously be looking at whatever our 12, 13 match card is, it's 9 matches, and then we have 4 pay-per-view quality matches by our own standard, and those are spread out. I think it's a great thing that they don't have a pay-per-view in July, that they can build the blood and guts, and you can beef up some of your television with some of these like destination matches that don't all have to be put into your 5-hour pay-per-view window and spread them out. I don't think your pay-per-view will be hurt, and I think your television would be enhanced if...
So would you have considered MJF versus Rouge, MJF's first match back from injury, as one of those matches?
Yes. Yes, I would have.
And that didn't play a big difference this week.
It was of all the quarters. I mean, it was one that at least did better than most.
Well, it was commercial free and it was the first one.
Yeah, well, it was, again, it did not have any kind of lead-in attached to it either. Like, I didn't think this was, like, believe me, this didn't bolster the number either. But, again, my argument would not be, well, just give up on marquee matches on Dynamite. I would be doing the opposite.
I don't think they are. And, like, is it just, I don't know if an Ospreay or an Okada would be that difference maker either for AEW. I mean, they're still very new names, I think, to a mainstream audience that aren't very established yet. I would like to see AEW not panic over something like this and just kind of stay the course of delivering quality programming that satisfy their core base.
They're not going to dig up more security footage that they don't have when they do a bad number?
Maybe they have.
Like, they are pretty reactionary when it does come to some of this. Like, you have seen them be very reactionary. And this would be the ultimate test of whether this.
But you want to find like stunts that last, you know, that have a lasting effect. And clearly
they got tons out of that. We're still living off the fumes of the security footage. Sure, that was monumental.
Oh, we got a great Jack Perry bus as a result of it.
That's true. Yeah. Yes. Anyway, it was certainly a big number to look at. Mm-hmm. All right. Last two things here. Coming up in just a couple of hours, it's Josh Barnett's Bloodsport at Sumo Hall on Triller TV. This is a standalone pay-per-view. It's not part of their Triller TV Plus, but we've got among the matches, Josh Barnett against Jon Moxley in their rematch, I think from Bloodsport 6. Minoru Suzuki against Timothy Thatcher. Hideki Sakin versus Quentin Rampage Jackson. Kazushi Sakuraba against Santino Marella, the match everyone was hoping for during the Pride Grand Prix in 2000. Masakatsu Funaki versus Davey Boy Smith Jr. Konami versus Maya Fukuda. Eric Hammer against Takuya Nomura. Hideki Suzuki versus Hikaru Sato. And Fuminari Abe versus Yu Iizuka.
I'm pumped. I mean...
Are you watching this?
Yes, definitely. I've seen every Bloodsport, and it continues to be one of the favorite sort of things outside of my regular consumption of AEW and WWE mainly programming, because it offers something very unique for any performer who chooses to enter this sort of format. You know, now you're bringing it to Japan with, I think, a longer history even of short shoot style professional wrestling. And so I'm very curious to see what a lot of these towns will have to offer. A match like Anthony Carelli versus Kazushi Sakuraba, I like, you already know Sakuraba knows how to work a style like this, of course.
Does Sakuraba do the Cobra?
That's a great question. I don't know. But he's from UWFI. Even before Pride, he was working this sort of style. And Santino Marella famously opened up a gym called Battle Arts. and hiring Yuki Ishikawa as well. So, like, you know, it's his dream to like, this is a dream match 100%, I'm sure, for Santino Marella, Anthony Corelli. So that is very fascinating. I'm very curious to see what Quentin Rampage Jackson does in a professional wrestling setting working this sort of style. Yes, I mean, it favors, like, people with an MMA background doing this, but to make a warped real fight look real is an almost entirely different skill. And does Rampage have that? He is an actor. So
Rampage is, like, the most interesting one here. Like, I think this could just be a mess. I don't know how seriously he's going to take this, but we will see. I mean, I just love the idea of, like, mixing it. Like, I hope they shoot some angle where we somehow have John Moxley and Masakatsu Funaki set up for a future show or something. Like, there's just,
I bet you Moxley would love that. Yeah, I'm sure Barnett would love that too.
I think there's been some changes to this because I saw the latest card that they put out, and Mike O'Hearn was supposed to be on this card. He's in the bottom left there against Eric Hammer, and he is now, Eric Hammer is listed with Takuya Nomura. Mike O'Hearn used to be an American Gladiator, and, like, I thought, man, like, talk about just what could be a train wreck. So I don't know what the deal is, but there were some changes to the card, but that's happening at 2 a.m. Eastern. So by the time a lot of you are listening to this, it's probably up. But yeah, this is one of the more interesting shows that I plan to check out at some point this weekend. And Collision on Saturday night. They taped this on Thursday in Allentown, Pennsylvania. We'll give you the spoiler-free lineup. Will Ospreay against Brian Cage for the international title. Kazuchika Okada against Ultimo Guerrero for the continental title. Hechicero versus Matt Menard. Malachi Black and Brody King against LSG and MSG, not the arena nor the food ingredient.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Jericho and Big Bill against Private Party, the Patriarchy versus Iron Savages and Jack Jameson, Lady Frost and Layla Hirsch against Tony Storm and Mariah May, and Joe Hook and Katsuyori Shibata against the Premier Athletes.
Mm-hmm.
From Allentown, PA,
and perhaps a match announcement for Forbidden Door coming out of this.
That's right.
As well.
That is right. And I guess we can give everyone the update from Rampage, which is almost over here. On that show, we had Leo Rush qualifying for the TNT ladder match, beating Action Andretti, and Willow Nightingale advancing past Serena Deeb. So it will be Willow Nightingale and Chris Statlander in the second round of the Owen Hart Cup tournament. They didn't swerve us.
No, they did not. No,
man. But everyone saw it coming. I mean, it's just so predictable.
Missed opportunity.
All of your news can be found up at postwrestling.com. If you want to hear the audio news updates, we have one up today for all members of the Post Wrestling Cafe. So check that out. And we want you to check out the Cash-In on Saturday, July the 6th. New location at Wide Open, 139A Spadina Avenue at Spadina and Richmond. We will be hanging out, and we hope that all of you join us. 2 p.m. Eastern time, free event. So come down and meet us. Davey is busy in the lab concocting his wrestling-themed cocktails as you can get all liquidated before Money in the Bank.
Liquidated, yes. Yeah, very good. I love it. Yeah, this is now a free event. It's in a much smaller venue than previous, and it's way less pressure for us to put on, and I'm sure it'll be just as fun, if not even more so. So if you're in Toronto before Money in the Bank, drop by Wide Open, whether or not you're going to the WWE event.
And we'll still be recording a wrestling media panel that day, and we're going to be distributing it to everybody out there, and you can check that out after Money in the Bank weekend. So there you go. That is all for the plugs and promotion. Now it is time to move on over to SmackDown from the Allstate Arena in Chicago. Huge attendance. WrestleTix last update, 14,635. And we recap things with the most pressing issue coming out of Raw. The question on everyone's mind after some very, very scary words were uttered. That was Drew McIntyre quitting Raw. What is up with Drew McIntyre? And that's what we got a recap of. And they did make references to the Wyatt Six throughout the show. There was amped up security.
They replayed the attack. Yes.
They replayed the attack. So it's not like they forgot about it. But, I mean, we did witness what I am still led to believe were murders on Monday. No update on the livelihood of Chad Gable or anyone else. Chad Gable's out of his qualifying match. That's what we learned. So he could be dead.
I don't think he's dead. I think they would have mentioned if he was
that security guy whose head was up against and his brain had exploded. I think that guy has perished.
He might have, yeah. But okay. Since he's not a wrestler, I don't think they feel the need to mention that.
He was just a temp worker. He's okay. Mm-hmm. So that was our setup here. And CM Punk begins the show. He comes out and just a god here to this Chicago crowd. And they're loudly chanting for him. And he talks about the pressure of being on live TV, the pressure of speaking in front of your hometown crowd, and brings up the date of July 17th, 2011. He never actually said this was Money in the Bank, and I imagine like there was probably a decent amount of people in this crowd that might not have even been born when this occurred. But this was his big match with John Cena that amazingly was 13 years ago.
Yes, mm-hmm.
Long time ago. Way yeah. He says that he came out that night, promised to win the title. Did I embarrass you, Chicago? And I was told that if I went to Glasgow, I'd get jumped. I didn't ruin anyone's day, did I? And he said it was payback for Drew kicking him while he was down. When you kicked me while I was down, you were also kicking Chicago. How dare Drew kick an entire city? And he says, I had three options. I could stay down, which wasn't an option. I could get up and turn the other cheek, not an option. Or I could choose the Chicago way. Where you send me to the hospital, I send you to the morgue. But then he made it very clear in this PG environment, I'm not meaning I'm going to kill you. That happens on Monday. He says, I'm going to kill your career. But I didn't think it would be this easy where Drew would quit. He took his ball and he went home. Our favorite WWE analogy, the old ball being taken home by a disgruntled performer.
Sure, that's what somebody does when they're disgruntled and they don't want to play the game anymore. But thankfully, WWF has a lot of other balls.
Lots of balls to play with.
Yeah.
Great promo here. Just a rah-rah Chicago speech by CM Punk. And then Paul Heyman walks out and immediately they start chanting ECW. And he also wanted to talk about balls because he says how hot as balls it is outside. And it's also hot as balls inside here. And this made me look up what the weather was in Chicago. And it was pretty damn hot today. It was like 31 Celsius.
That's pretty hot.
Yeah, that was hotter than us. So he says how Punk sat with his children at the Hall of Fame and calls Punk his best friend. He meant it then. He meant it now. And they start chanting Roman. And Punk has this line, you're the one person that could hijack my own promo in Chicago and get them to chant for Roman. And then the crowd took this as an indicator to switch back and chanted for Punk.
Now, did he actually call CM Punk his best friend at the Hall of Fame?
I don't have a speech off the top of my head. It doesn't ring a bell to me, but
I only ask because there, you know, from this episode forward, I guess we are now to recognize CM Punk as the best friend of Paul Heyman. In the past, of course, I feel like that was famously like Brock Lesnar. Paul Heyman has a new best friend now, and it's CM Punk. At least for storyline purposes, they are giving us a lot of exposition about, I think, the very deep relationship between these two that we really haven't been updated on since, like, you know, their on-screen appearances together way back over 13 years ago, or at least 13 years ago, I should say.
So Heyman enters the ring and he gives Punk this long hug, and the crowd is very moved by this touching show of affection by two men. And he says that he was listening to sports radio on the way here, and one of the hosts referred to Chicago as CM Punk's town. And Solo was pissed because he wants every town to be his. And he gives Punk a warning. They're coming for you. Please, for your own good, leave. And the crowd starts chanting, fuck you, Solo. The Bloodline walk out and Solo claims this is his show and this is my city. And Punk can either pay his respect to me or you'll never be cleared to return again. And the crowd is loudly chanting for Punk. And Heyman asks Punk, take me with you too. And Punk goes to put his finger in the air and says, I acknowledge you, but then proceeds to call them fake ass Usos and a phony cosplay tribal chief as they enter the ring to attack Punk. And there to back him up is Cody, who's wielding some baseball bats as the Bloodline back down. And Cody states, I've already beaten one head of the table and he wants to settle it with Solo tonight. We'll leave all of our others in the back, just you and me. And thus concluded this 21-minute open to SmackDown, which I think probably did fantastic, unless everybody was just swept up by the story of the Edmonton Oilers.
I feel like we've been missing out on some of these 20-minute plus talking segments ever since Dwayne Johnson left this program. And
yeah,
when you have, I guess, somebody, you know, who is of a status of a CM Punk, I'm sure they're more than grateful to give him this time. This was fun. You know, like Punk being on TV because of his sporadic appearances still feels very special right now. And that's doubly so when you're talking about CM Punk in Chicago. And Punk was great here. Great delivery, very straightforward babyface promo directed at Drew McIntyre. But again, most interesting about all of this is, seems to be what they might be building here between CM Punk and Paul Heyman. Again, we are now to believe that these two are the best of friends. And with a bit more information from Paul Heyman in regards to CM Punk and how he wanted to protect CM Punk throughout the Bloodline's dominance to come a bit later on. So I like all of that together. You know, it rekindles a relationship that they formed years ago, of course, and now they are possibly even uniting against the Bloodline in the future. But of course, you also had Cody and Punk together, and really high level of star power shared between these two on screen. So it at least teases of a future feud between CM Punk and the rest of the Bloodline, but maybe not picking up on that directly coming off of this episode.
Yeah, this is Punk's like 2025, 2026 programs he's laying the groundwork for, along with his new allegiance here, the best friends in the world.
That's right, yeah. We also did not get any sort of confirmation of clearance from CM Punk like Punk was hoping
for. Nothing in terms of that. So
so clearly he didn't do physicality. He got taken out by Drew off screen. So I think that would suggest that he's not clear yet. And in fact, Heyman said, you're going to be cleared any moment now. So I guess
any moment. Like we could just get like the anonymous GM, the old Raw GM just beeps in and says, you have been cleared.
You never know. Yeah. So I'm taking this to mean that he's not cleared yet.
In the form of like the storyline, like what was Punk's game plan here? Like, had he not been interrupted by anyone? Like, what was the speech that was?
Yeah, he wanted to trash talk Drew McIntyre.
And then it's like, all right, see ya. Yeah, I mean, at least he didn't have to travel far for this. I mean,
he goes to shows for less. He shows up to NXT without really any purpose at all. Yeah. We do have a bit of breaking news here as it relates to Chad Gable and Adam Pearce.
Is he alive?
Well, not only is he alive, he's been cleared for action on Monday, according to Adam Pearce. Well,
he was at least concussed. At the very least, he was concussed, wasn't he?
Like you mentioned, John, you know, it's been 4 days. He's an Olympian.
He would have fought Michael Chandler.
Yes, absolutely. So he is, in fact, actually going to be placed back into that Money in the Bank qualifying three-way.
So Ilya's out?
I believe so, yes.
That's really weird.
Very weird. Yeah, like, why would you even go through all that?
I have no idea. Bianca Belair is warming up in the back, and Jade Cargill comes up.
I should also mention there was glitching in the video, so maybe expect more Wyatt 6 interaction in that match.
Where, in the Punk video?
No, in the Adam Pearce video.
Oh, in the Adam Pearce video. I thought I missed this. Okay, gotcha. So this was just some digital exclusive they put up. Belair is warming up, and Jade says she's not here to distract tonight. She knows that Bianca's getting ready for a qualifying match, but she's going to speak to Aldis about a tag title rematch, and Belair says how she's going to qualify, and then we will get our belts back. Cody meets up with Orton and Owens, tells him he wants to face Solo alone, and Orton was like, are you sure? And Cody's like, I can handle this. And Randy's like, okay. He just took off. He didn't need to have his arm twisted. Owens had a little bit more concern for Cody, but Cody insisted he had a plan too. What was that plan?
Did he have a plan? Let's just think.
His plan was Randy and Kevin Owens were not going to listen to him and come to his aid because he had nobody else to back him up.
Yeah, what was his plan? That's a great question.
He got attacked, and it was 3-on-1, and he was going to be screwed unless these guys decided to ignore him. They could have just taken off.
Yeah, we never saw that plan.
Not the planning type. Meechan, Bianca Belair, and Chelsea Green in our first of three Money in the Bank qualifying matches. Bayley is watching backstage. Green hits a suicide dive, and then Meechan hits a back suplex to both off the turnbuckle. All three are down. She hits a eat the feet, sending Belair to the floor. Green goes for the roll up and then stops and eat the feet. Then the unprettier gets blocked by Meechan, and Meechan lifts up Chelsea Green for a Styles clash. So I think this is your most compelling weird connection, is Meechan and AJ. What's going on with them? Because you're always curious about this, and here was another big clue.
I don't even know if it's an actual storyline that they're teasing. Like, I think
they're just running with this on their own.
Yeah, so we
Meechan's desperately trying to stay with this group and not get forgotten about.
Who knows? Like, and I don't think they care to really answer it. Like, Meechan is just loosely affiliated with the OC still. That's about as far as I think they'll say.
So Meechan hits the Styles Clash. Belair dives in to break the cover, and then Meechan rotates. Belair just sends Meechan right overhead with a German suplex, dropping her on her chest, and then hits a KOD when Chelsea tosses Belair out and steals the cover. And this place went nuts when Chelsea won in 7 minutes and 26 seconds.
They did, yeah. I thought it was a pretty good match here. You know, really exciting pace between the three. Belair, as usual, very much felt like the star, but I thought Meechan looked really good as well. And I don't know if that's just because she's been getting a lot more ring time than usual. It feels like Meechan is on like almost every
show.
She
feels like she's on every show. And I know that's not the case, but I just feel like she's always in some kind of tournament to get into another title, multi-person title match. And this was the latest.
But I think that like very consistent presence has helped her, you know, both maybe in her in-ring performance confidence, as well as just like having her be a bit more ingrained to the audience rather than just like the occasional member of the OC. But Chelsea here was actually really over to this crowd. I think she's in a spot now where the audience, at least like an audience like Chicago's, wants to show their appreciation for how entertaining they find her, despite her being a heel. And the crowd almost wanted to see her win to get this sort of recognition, right? And I feel like that'll very much carry to a Toronto crowd as well. You know, obviously with her being Canadian, having some effect, but also I think Toronto is a similar type of crowd to Chicago, where
short drive from Vancouver to Toronto.
Close enough, right? We all, you know, live in igloos and yeah.
We call each other on the phone every day, you know,
sure.
All of us citizens. Blair Davenport approaches Bayley, who's still watching in the back, and says she has her qualifying match next week and looks forward to cashing in on Bayley. Solo is with Paul Heyman and asks Heyman, do you really want to leave? And Heyman says no. And then Solo goes to say some instruction and his audio just gets cut. It's like, is this by design? Are we supposed to like, we're like, this is some hidden secret? No, this is just like some audio glitch that was.
No,
like,
it's the Wyatt Six.
Well, how treacherous. We're going to mute him. This is Okada was running the audio on this show too. Bitch.
I hit the wrong button.
And they Solo explain, basically he's telling Heyman to take care of the problem. That is Kevin Owens and Randy Orton. And they're going to have a talk later.
I think this guy's doing a really good job of playing the threatening boss, you know. I think he's great at it.
Caleb Braxton interviewed Grayson Waller. Austin Theory is at home recovering after taking the bullet for Grayson last week, and he's going to win the briefcase for Austin, and then DIY enter, and they start talking about this never-ending chase of theirs for these tag titles when they hear a loud bang on the garage, and they exit stage left as we focus on the main eventers as the garage opens, and there is a bloodied from the mouth CM Punk with a recently social media free Drew McIntyre standing over top of Phil, and he lifts up Phil onto his shoulders. And dude, Otis was very impressive a few weeks ago with Tozawa and Maxine carrying both of them, and I'm not stating this is the same feat of strength, but dude, this was like a Iron Man here had to climb. He had to walk like a decent amount of distance here with like a 240-pound guy here and did it pretty seamlessly.
This was their usage of the Lee fitting Steadicam long shot, and yeah, he had to look like this was an easy feat for him, you know, and he did it. Like, this was very
didn't
impressive.
Have to readjust him. I mean,
I know
he's got this blood all this mock blood on his hands. I liked actually the touch of like the blood is on Drew's hands here.
What is Phil Brooks at like? What's his weight right now? 200? Like you think?
I'd imagine he's in the 220-ish, 230 region.
Yeah,
would be my guess. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'm overshooting him a little bit.
Yeah. What do you think of their like seemingly continued and now a bit more frequent usage of what looks to be very fake blood in their angles?
I don't mind it.
I don't mind the fakeness of it. I just mean the usage of blood as a device in general.
I think that if I think the audience is pretty non-discerning when it comes to how they use it. I'll put it this way. If they were to open up this garage and this guy had actually like gigged himself, I would have thought that that's like the dumbest idea possible. I think that this was perfectly fine.
Well, again, like, I have no issue at all with the fake blood. I actually like it, and I'm for it, you know, and for the...
I'm fine with, like, blading instead of, like, someone just ramming his head into a post. Like, that to me made no sense.
Well, yeah, sure. But, like, if you're... Like, in the end, trying to tell stories in a safe way without the risk of spreading diseases like hepatitis, use fake blood. It's perfectly fine. I just find it more notable that they are even using blood as a device to create drama now. When I don't think this would have been something they would have entertained.
And coming so soon after they just used it on Clash too, it's not as though they like kind of paced this out. But
they got a great deal on the fake blood, I guess.
They got it. They got a whole like batch of it. So they had the last of it here in Chicago. So he just dumped Punk onto the stage at the entrance and. Nick Aldis comes out and he's furious. He's like, Drew, this is a guy on the other brand and you're on the other brand. And suddenly Nick Aldis is like, actually, you could just kill him. It doesn't matter. I guess Nick Aldis is just a good guy here. It's like he doesn't have any horse in the race here. These aren't his guys.
Well, I mean, he's
how did you guys get onto this show? That should have been his question.
Maybe that's why you're so mad.
He's like, wait a minute, the quarter's going to pop with these two. So he was just left for dead. I like this a lot. You know, coming here into Chicago, you could argue that maybe like the angle was almost too strong on Monday if he was just coming back 4 days later. But
we expected it though. We expected it a Mark Henry, you know, AJ Styles type of scenario with Drew McIntyre.
Well, again, something you just did, but. Anyway, I just thought it was a really good angle on Monday that you just kind of like, and he's back on Raw Monday, they explained. So he will follow up with whatever this was.
So this could mean a couple things. It could mean Punk not having announced any sort of official clearance. This could be a way of delaying that and having him off screen a bit longer with a big angle like this. Or it could mean that we're going to see this match very soon. So which one do you think it is?
I think this is SummerSlam. I think that would be, and given that it's Drew and where he goes for like the jugular on his promos, the fact that it's taking place, not in the same arena, but the city of the Mickey Gall fight. I feel like that is, he's going to
say. I don't think they'll mention it, will they?
Maybe I think he's going to make, I think they will absolutely bring up that this is the city of CM Punk's lowest of lows between the UFC and where he quit the WWE and walked out.
Interesting.
Yeah. Which they brought up already before, so it's nothing new. But I would imagine this is SummerSlam, unless there's some giant setback with his injury. But that would be my thought. And this gives a reason to delay and not have these guys attached to Money in the Bank. Like, I don't see really a role for Drew on Money in the Bank. And they do a whole stretcher job and take Punk off into the ambulance. Tama Tonga, Carmelo Hayes, and Randy Orton in our next qualifier. Orton was super over here, so over that he took an additional 20 minutes for his entrance. And then we get into the meat of the match. Tama Tonga and Hayes are working together until they're not, and they start fighting. Hayes manages La Mystica onto Tama, and Tama hits a backbreaker. Orton returns to stop the cover. And then after a first 48 to Orton, Tama and Carmelo Hayes can't agree on who should pin Randy Orton. It's almost like they're fighting for themselves. Orton lands a draping DDT on both, signals for the RKO when Tonga Loa runs out and gets knocked off the apron. Owens attacks Loa and then sidesteps, sending Tama out of the ring, allowing Carmelo Hayes to schoolboy Randy in 9 minutes and 35 seconds. And we get Carmelo advancing to join Jey Uso in the Money in the Bank qualifying match. I thought this was like just a little too similar to what we just did with Chelsea Green of like the unexpected guy stealing the pin here, but that was that match. It was fine.
I mean, I didn't really mind it myself. If it means like a continued philosophy of using the Money in the Bank now as a way to elevate guys, which seems to be like the entire mandate of these several months, you know, of this new regime and their storytelling. So like I like the fact that somebody like a Carmelo, who was very understated heading into this match, clearly like not the biggest star heading into this particular qualifying match, ends up winning it. I think having, you know, Orton as well break off into his own program outside of the ladder match, you know, Orton's pretty much, he's so effective in these matches. Like the success of a match like this against Carmelo and Tama Tonga entirely rests on how much the crowd cares about Randy Orton. because without him, I don't think people would care about this match. But he's also in a stage of his career now where he can play the greatest hits and the crowd will love him despite how many times he might lose. And I think it's a great way of utilizing your aging stars with incredible star power to hopefully transfer some of that onto Carmelo Hayes. So, yeah,
he needs something. Like he's certainly cooled off on this main roster run, but Money in the Bank, it allows you to take some of these kind of overlooked guys that have not really stood out, and we'll get into that with the next one as well with Andrade. But yeah, Graves talks about, for weeks we have been seeing all the cryptic messages, the riddles and QR codes. All those riddles came to a head as they showed a recap of the Wyatt 6 debut. Now, I didn't rewind to listen to this, but someone had noted that for the closing shot, they dubbed over Bray Wyatt's voice saying, "We're here," at the end of this video package. So someone can maybe double check or confirm that to me, because I didn't have time to rewind and listen to it, but I did see some comments about that.
That would be a detail that I think would be very much in line with the type of production that I think they've tried to put into it. So I think it's safe to say at this point that Bray Wyatt is the sixth member of this group. And the way that they're presenting it, I mean, rightfully so, I think audiences are making a big deal about like how they're going to this is murder. How are they going to present murder? They're going to present it like it's a comic book type of, you know, not serious storyline. Like they're not presenting this as if like a real crime had been committed. They're presenting this as if like these are characters and they did something very dastardly, you know. And that might not work for a lot of people. I continue to remain to be open-minded to see how the follow-up.
I'm curious to see. I think they're going to pull like a pretty good number on Monday, just because barring this 5-1 for the Edmonton Oilers, by
game
the way.
Seven.
Game seven they will be up against on Monday. Yeah. But man, the YouTube number was gigantic for this. Like you will have an initial wave of interest because everyone's curious to see how they play this. And maybe in 2 months we'll be looking back at this and thinking, yeah, they fell into all the pitfalls that these stories have presented in the past, and maybe they have a fresh look at things. So I think everyone's open-minded to this. I think what they have most going for it is that you do have a lot of fans that are rooting for this because of the sentimentality that is behind this.
And I think like some fans generally want something like this to be in their professional wrestling program.
And a lot don't.
I think they have to find a good balance, and they have not necessarily been all that successful in recent years.
LA Knight comes out and he calls out Logan Paul to come out and bring his belt to, and gets no response. He says he was turned down for a title match, so I went to his house. Then I was told to show up here tonight. So next week he's got a qualifying match with Logan Paul and Santos Escobar, but that's not the match he wants. But mentions he could win the briefcase and then go cash in for the U.S. title. So this is now the object of his desire. Santos comes out and says he calls LA Knight delusional for trying to constantly go after Logan Paul. You're like a desperate Chicago fanboy. It's like, what does that mean? I have no idea what this means. He says, you have to deal with me too next week. And LA Knight flat out says, I am looking past you. And Santos goes for the Phantom Driver. It's turned into the Blunt Force Trauma. And then Knight cuts a promo into the camera when Logan appears from behind and drills him with the titanium right hand.
Mm-hmm. And he kept bragging afterwards, like showing us the time on his phone, bragging about how it only took me 30 minutes. I'm like, 30 minutes? Like, when did you start the clock? You know, like, what exactly was this in reference to?
I have no clue.
Yeah, like, he was like, really, he really wanted us to know that it only took him 30 minutes to accomplish this. So I don't know if he was teasing something on social media about when he might have like entered the left or wherever he was before to get here. But
they were advertising that LA Knight was going to call him out. From Thursday night, they started promoting that on the website. So he had like 24 hours to get to Chicago.
Yeah, not really sure what that is. But so clearly Knight and Logan Paul are likely to cancel each other out in the qualifying match. And so the person left behind, with the way that they're booking, could very well be Santos Escobar qualifying.
It's like all the people with important programs bypass Money in the Bank, and all the leftovers get into the ladder match. That's sort of the theme.
Pretty much, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Next up, we go to Grayson Waller, Andrade, and Kevin Owens, which is pretty much exactly where you think this is going. Tama and Tonga attack Kevin Owens on his way to the entrance.
Tama and Tonga, dude, they really need
to just streamline these names. Tama and Tonga attack Kevin Owens as he's making his entrance. Orton comes out with a chair and chases them away. Owens limps his way to the ring, and he's still going to participate in the match. He ends up taking a back body drop onto the edge by Waller. Waller then is hit with a sunset bomb by Andrade, and that sets up the commercial break. Andrade hits the double knees to both, and then Owens and Waller, Waller rolls in and hits a double flatliner, tries to get pins on both, and Owens recovers, hits a tower of doom to both, climbs to the top for a swanton to Andrade, and then gets a two count, goes for the pop-up, but the knee gives out, and manages to land a stunner, but Waller breaks the cover, snaps Owens' knee on the apron, and hits a DDT to Owens on the floor, and Waller does his somersault into the ring, but instead of hitting the blockbuster, it's turned into the message, and Andrade wins in 9:55.
Whatever you want to call it, the message, the shadow, La Sombra, whatever. It looked really cool today, you know, with the sort of out of nowhere entry all coming off of the Grayson Waller rolling deal. I thought overall this was a very good match. You know, great selling from Owens to give him that extra level of sympathy. Good urgency from Waller here, essentially facing off against two baby faces. And Andrade, as always, looked very good too. So like we've seen in the pattern throughout the course of the evening, the people that are qualifying for these Money in the Bank matches are people that have been pretty kind of I guess underdeveloped, or at least like lacking in credibility in the case of the Chelsea Green, but they're clearly using maybe a spotlight like this to help hopefully jumpstart Andrade to give him a little bit of momentum, which he's been very much lacking since his return in January.
If you want a graphic that really emphasizes the TKO era, this is it. Wheatley Vodka and Prime Energy presenting the men's ladder match, sponsored by the boys.
Oh, goodness. Wow.
God, they can just like shoehorn as many logos as we can into this lower third.
Jeez. Wow. Okay.
There you go.
Well, there's a bit more empty space next to the letter L right here. I think they could fit another two.
God, they could digitally just put a logo on this guy's blue shirt. I mean, they could just for the YouTube upload. Tiffany Stratton starts mocking Meechan for losing her qualifying match, and Tiffany's got her own match next week. And then Meechan says how you had to crawl to Nia Jax for protection. And as she goes to strike, Meechan stops her, and in comes the queen, Nia Jax, who just drills Meechan. And that was Queen Nia's role on the show.
She doesn't really have a whole lot to do between now and SummerSlam, right?
No. She should be asking for the Gunther vacations. Like, can I just... can I go hang out on the beach for a few weeks and I'll show up for the SummerSlam build?
I guess they are using this time to build the continued relationship between her and Tiffany Stratton by having her do things like this. Meechan might have to call the rest of the OC for help.
Next week, the show is at Madison Square Garden, and the qualifying matches will feature Jade Cargill, Candice LeRae, and Tiffany Stratton. Based on this pattern, this should be Candice LeRae's match. Like, she should have this in the bag.
Yeah, it could.
Naomi.
Well, think about it. I mean, Belair didn't qualify, presumably because she and Jade are going for the tag team titles again. So that would make Jade a bit of an underdog for this, wouldn't it?
I do see Tiffany Stratton probably qualifying for this one. Candice LeRae is almost like she's too far down to get into this. Naomi, Blair Davenport, and Indy Hartwell. See, for these matches, I assume that we're also going to have that that last chance match at the end of all of this. So while I see Davenport qualifying, it would make sense to put Naomi in that match too, and maybe that's a way they get around it. And then Logan Paul, LA Knight, and Santos Escobar, which, yes, I imagine Santos is the guy that gets in.
I'm thinking as well.
Kayla Braxton gives the update: Punk will be overnight in a hospital for further evaluation. We get Cody walking in the back. We go to break. We come back, and he makes his long entrance to the ring. We go to another break. Then Solo is with Heyman backstage, and Heyman told the Tongans to take care of business, and that's what he did, taking out Orton and Owens, preventing them from getting into Money in the Bank, and he tells Solo, you are breaking commandments. Roman Reigns had said before he left that CM Punk is off limits because of Heyman's relationship with him, and that Cody is not someone Solo should be handling. And Solo informs Heyman, I'm sorry that I'm the one who has to tell you this, but Roman is not coming back. And in maybe the best response possible, Heyman goes, how can that be? How can that be?
So was this new information from Solo Sikoa? I mean, you know, up until this point, I think we know that Solo is in charge until the tribal chief comes back, with no specific mention of who Solo deems to be the tribal chief, of course. Now he's saying the tribal chief, or wait, Roman specifically, is not coming back. So does this indicate that, does this confirm that the tribal chief that Solo has been following is not Roman Reigns? Or does it mean something else?
I think that's what the reveal is going to be, that there is someone else that is Solo Sikoa is taking orders from. And
did this confirm that?
I mean, that's kind of been what I've taken from the first time this was mentioned after WrestleMania. But I think this does confirm things. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Also, again, brings up like the sort of background information of CM Punk's relationship with the Bloodline, and Paul Heyman letting us know that he specifically asked for Roman not to attack CM Punk, and Roman agreeing.
So Solo comes out, and Graves says how, don't worry, our broadcaster has said we will stay with this match until it ends. I was like, you're on Fox, okay? You've got affiliate programming. There isn't a goddamn chance you're staying with this match until it ends. I didn't take this seriously for a second that they were doing any kind of overrun. And, I mean, we pretty much had an angle here. Cody lands a suicide dive, sends Solo into the steps a few times, and then he's ready to go home with the Crossroads. He knows about the affiliates. And the Tongans attack for the DQ at a minute 41. That prompts Orton and Owens to come down. Owens hobbling on one leg, so it's 3-on-3. Tama and Tonga are taken out, and they surround Solo 3-on-1, and he's pleading before turning into a smile. And there appears Jacob Fatu. The rumors are true. Mr. Online Corey Graves with his finger on the pulse as Jacob Fatu lays out all three. He hits a Samoan drop to Kevin Owens on the steps. Graves is yelling, this guy needs to be locked up. And then a running spear to Randy Orton through the barricade for the dude that came back from near career threatening back surgery. This looked really rough for Randy because he did not go smoothly through this barricade. Hopefully he was all right. And Cody fights back, gets a Uranagi onto the edge, and then in the big spot, Cody is placed onto the desk. Jacob climbs to the top turnbuckle, and you have this excellent low-angle shot, and Jacob Fatu comes off the top with a splash, putting Cody through the desk. This was an unbelievable visual, and Corey's big line was, there's a werewolf on the loose. So we got the Wyatt Six on the loose on Raw, and we got the werewolf on SmackDown, and then all of the Tongans put their fingers in the air to end the show. I thought they did a fantastic job introducing Jacob Fatu as the cousin with like a screw loose that is totally uncontrollable. Like everything we wanted to see in the presentation of Tama and Tonga, like just his facial expressions too, as he's attacking him. Like I just thought Jacob Fatu did a excellent job, and the splash was, I thought that was excellent. You should replay the hell out of that.
And he's wearing a werewolf shirt, so I don't think that
that's probably
was,
everyone's branded. Yes,
He's the werewolf. All right. Well, it was either
is he
werewolf,
better than the infamous?
I'm not sure. Yeah, it was either that or Caesar, I suppose. And they might be reserving Caesar Sikoa for somebody else. I thought it was a great introduction for Jacob Fatu. Like you mentioned, John, I think his intensity is way more appropriate for, I think, the type of infamy that they're trying to portray the Tongans as. I've been, like, I think the Gorillas of Destiny have been fine, but they've really not leapt out to me in any single performance I've seen from them in the WWE. And Jacob Fatu in, what, I don't know, 2 minutes, has already felt like he's a lot more special and I think a lot more fitting for this type of role of this uncontrollable, Yes, I guess werewolf. You could say, if you're to pick any animal or a mythical creature, I guess. And he already feels like a more dangerous member of this entire group, like a more dangerous member of what Solo Sikoa was at one point, you know, for the bloodline. So I'm very excited to see what they do with him.
Yeah, I thought this was a very big storyline driven episode of SmackDown. You did have the advancements of several of the qualifying matches. The matches were fine. It's not like there were like dud matches or anything like that. But tonight was all about the introduction of Jacob Fatu, the return of Drew McIntyre, CM Punk, the 20-minute opener, the bloodline story advancing, and Roman's status in the air. So they advanced a lot of stories on this particular episode.
And chat room informing us that Jacob Fatu on the Indies and MLW was known as the Samoan Werewolf. So I guess that's where it comes from.
All right. We're going to open up the phone lines for everybody to call in if you are a member of the Post Wrestling Cafe that gives you the ability to call in to Rewind to SmackDown each week. So Let us go to the phone lines.
All right. Let's start things off here with Andy B. Welcome, Andy B.
Hi, guys. How are you doing? Hope you're well.
We're great. Thank you for calling.
Okay, so I think last week I called in and I complained about the state of SmackDown, and I have to eat my words because I thought this was a thoroughly enjoyable show. It started off with like that box office segment with Punk and Heyman and like a hot babyface tag, which is a great formula on WWE TV and always seems to work. And I think that Punk Drew business was just my angle of the year. Incredible beatdown, blood is still such a novelty in WWE, and it made that Drew quitting segment all the more worth it. And that Drew quitting segment, I thought, was really well done too, because it tied into that referee giving Punk his shirt, Triple H's comments praising him at the press conference, and Drew's character where he feels like he's the only guy who sees these things and everybody else doesn't, and he's still a little bit of a hypocrite. I think it's all really well done and nicely it's coming together. And to me, like, it's just the most interesting feud by distance.
Do you think, where do you think it ends up? Where do you think they actually have their match? And do you think they're on pace to having it peak at that destination?
I think they're working the match at SummerSlam. I think this is far too big for Money in the Bank. It does feel a little early to shoot the angle, but like I'd imagine Punk is off TV for a few weeks because of this, and then he can come back and do like a hot beatdown on Drew and like a fiery babyface promo, and then they'll be off to the races.
Yeah, I'm in agreement with you. I mean, this thing has actually been going on for a long, long time right now, and it's feeling hotter than ever at the moment. And the moment that Punk can actually retaliate and be involved in more physicality with Drew, I think the crowd is going to be pretty nuts. So SummerSlam is how many weeks away, or how many months we're talking?
I mean, we're 6 weeks.
6 weeks, okay. All right. That's not that long, actually. No. By the way, I don't know if you mentioned, John, but Drew took off CM Punk's
bracelet. Oh, the bracelet. Yeah.
And I think I just found online somebody post exactly what that bracelet was. Credit at Victoria, AZE _ on Twitter, who says, for anyone wondering what Drew took from Punk, you see a close-up of Punk's bracelet showing the names Larry and AJ. So... clearly a very personal item for Mr. Brooks.
Guess what I
got. Oh, you got one too?
No, I took it actually from IAS.
Oh, no. Goodness. Yeah. Are these bracelets all the rage these days? What's going on here? Orange Cassidy giving
Orange
Renee
Cassidy,
one?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
That's one of my favorite things about all of these like Punk feuds. Like, they all have like these little nice nuggets that like you can kind of delve into, and they all work out really well. So I guess just before I run, I wanted to ask you one last question. So in the latest edition of The Observer, Dave reported that Solo was going to be headlining SummerSlam with Cody. I feel like that's a step too far for Solo. I mean, going off today's show, honestly, I feel like Jacob Fatu is would feel like a bigger match for Cody at this point than even Solo.
Too early.
Are we sacrificing like a SummerSlam main event just for because it's just essentially like a pretext for a Reigns return, like I'm guessing, right?
Could be.
Solo's the main push guy at the moment. Like he's like the leader of the whole story. So I mean, if it would be way too early, I think, to get to Solo and Roman Reigns. I think that has a much longer destination attached to it. I don't look at that as like who are your options really for Cody? Like the Randy match doesn't feel as though that's something they're entertaining at the moment. And I think based on the attack on Sunday and tonight, like obviously this is going to be, Cody's going to be tied to the bloodline.
Mm. So on the other end, we'll have Gunther versus presumably Damian Priest. I mean, could be Seth Rollins, but I mean, you're getting a Gunther match. You're getting Drew versus Punk presumably as well. And then you would possibly get Solo versus Cody. I think Solo is an appropriate like SummerSlam level, you know, contender at this point, because the entire few months have sort of been building around him as like the biggest villain on the show, right? It is a sort of a storyline destination for Cody, and I think it feels right to me. But yeah,
thanks a lot, Andy.
Do you guys just think that's as hot as like the possible alternatives in Cody Orton and Rollins Gunther, which would have been like, I think, far bigger matches for the show? Thanks so much, Ken.
Thanks, Andy. Well, I mean, Rollins Gunther is entirely on the other side, and that could still take place, you know, regardless of Cody's opponent. But when we're talking about storyline, Solo is the right like SummerSlam level opponent for Cody. Orton feels like, you know, he would have to turn, and then he'd have to build up like, you know, to title contention.
Everything you established tonight is like you're putting that on pause then for the summer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it doesn't feel like it's sort of a climax of the storytelling that they've begun already. So those are our thoughts. Let's go up next to Brian. Hey, Brian.
Brian, are you there?
Good evening, John Way. Am I coming through? Okay? Yeah.
Yes, you are.
Hmm? Oh, okay. Yeah, here I am. Great. Oh, damn technical issues. I'm always coming through with them. Another awesome Rewind Away this week. Just listened to it this afternoon. Very well done by you, Way, along with Nate and Chris.
Thank you.
And yeah, it's been a heck of a... Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, it's been a heck of a week in wrestling. If I did not have plans tomorrow, I would stay up for Bloodsport Bushido. But just talking about tonight, a hot crowd, pretty good show overall. It's cool seeing Jacob Fatu finally show up. He looks like he dropped weight and made a big impression, especially on Cody's midsection. And I think prior to WWE, he's been more fun to watch for me than the Grills of Destiny, who here at the end of SmackDown acted like they didn't know Jacob would be part of this. They were kind of like trepidatious coming into the ring.
Yeah, they did so play that up in the ring at the end. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's probably part of the story. But I did have one burning question slash comment about AEW that might have a simple answer. Rampage, in the way it's presented and its content, feels like a syndicated show that you might see during the day. So do you think they would ever take the syndicated roof for this show, or does it still stay in its TNT slot because of the involved? And
you're cutting off a bit there.
Better numbers than TNT.
Okay, we're gonna let you go, Brian. But yeah. we heard your question about that. I don't see them going to like a syndicated model. I mean, it's such a like we saw ROH do that, and I think just syndication really does have its limitations in this day and age. I don't, like, to me, Rampage in the, like, we're going to see how valuable it is in this deal, but it's like an added hour of content that does, you know, it's fine. Like, it's not like it's embarrassing numbers. It is what it is, but it's a very clear number three show that is closer to what WCW Saturday Night was in its latter years, where it loads up. It's like, it's an hour of entertaining wrestling that I always enjoy watching Rampage, but I know if I miss a Rampage, I'm not going to be kicking myself over it unless there's, you know, but saying that tonight, like they did, like tonight's show, they did like load up the show with, like, you have an Owen Hart Cup match. You had a TNT qualifying match. Shingo Takagi is on tonight's show, which didn't even get mentioned on Friday, but like for an hour, I mean, Metalik and Commander are teaming on the show. Ray Phoenix has a quick match. Like that to me is like, that's a great hour of TV, but you are not, like it's not a priority program, and everyone like that's been very clear since Collision started.
As little maybe relevance as like a Rampage might have in sort of like the greater discussion these days, I feel like it would drop even more if it moved to a syndication model with like varying, you know, air times throughout the weekend. For instance, like, I don't know, like what do we talk about? Jacked. And
how about
Metal?
Excalibur getting on at the end of Dynamite and he has to go through all the different markets and when it's airing and when.
He would be like
Saturday at 11 a.m. in the in the Mississippi area.
I have no idea, like, sort of what those financials are like. I mean, maybe it's something still worth entertaining for a Tony Khan. Like, if let's say, you know, Warner's not interested in Rampage anymore, they already have Collision, they already have Rampage. Do whatever you want they already have Dynamite, they already have Collision, so do whatever else you want with Rampage. Syndication could be like one of those ideas. Online exclusive could also be another idea. I mean,
it's also allowed them that they went through all those 3-hour experiments earlier this year where Rampage followed Dynamite, and like that could be a play where Rampage is just eventually inserted into the Dynamite package and Dynamite gets an extra hour.
Yeah. Or you can use that extra hour to like direct people to whatever online service you might want to. Anyway, we're just wildly speculating at this point, but anyway, let's go up next to Caesar Sokoa. Welcome, Caesar Sokoa.
I heard the rumor yesterday that he's going to be Caesar Sokoa, and I was like, oh, damn it. I mean, it wasn't a bad name, by the way, but I was like, oh, you can't keep Jacob Fatu, but I'm glad that, you know, as a Jacob Fatu fan, I'm glad they kept the name. And this makes the Bloodline story a lot more interesting to me. I also don't mind that Solo is being positioned for Cody Rhodes. I know everyone's like not in favor of that if you read like the Reddits and the, you know, Twitters and all that, whatever. But
Hanzi, you got to stop listening to everyone online. You get very discouraged by the prevailing opinions out there.
Well, I guess I keep up with the discourse for my own thought. You know, honestly, you're right. I think everyone should take a break from social media. You know what I mean? Even though, you know, it's ridiculous.
Drew McIntyre, he had the right plan.
Exactly. You know,
I think he's coming back with a vengeance. You know, I think that was just to try to sell.
Oh, he's going
to
be on Threads, I bet, by the end of the night.
He actually posted a picture of Homelander bleeding profusely as one of his first tweets back. So I thought that was pretty good.
Oh, he's already back. Okay.
Oh yeah. So I was going to say with the Rampage talk you were just talking about, I always thought that like if they did a pre-packaged show and had like exclusive matches, they could do something like old school WWE where you had like a TNT talk show and just, or just have promos, like do old school promos heavy. I think sometimes when they do those exclusive promos, I think sometimes they get better than the ones that you see on television at times. With, especially AEW, the ones they put it exclusively on, I thought they've been pretty decent. With Solo, I definitely think if they do a trios match at Money in the Bank, I think that will I think Solo should beat Cody, pin him there, and then they do the Vader build, you know, with Shawn Michaels and all that, and the Drew and Punk storyline I thought was really really well done. I thought like the way they did it was really good. I guess I've been watching the Ricky Steamboat. I don't know if you guys seen the Ricky Steamboat A&E documentary. If you haven't, my criticism of some of the documentaries is that they always focus more on the real life issues, I understand, and not focusing on the actual storyline that they've partaken in. And I thought this one with Steamboat, they actually went through different storyline that he's been involved with rather than, because he's a good guy, right? He doesn't have any real life drug problems and all that kind of stuff. But when they're doing the Savage and Steamboat storyline, I remember how good that angle was of making you lose your voice. And I always thought that was a missed opportunity for a big angle, whether in AEW or WWE, to use that on CM Punk, because taking CM Punk's voice away is actually like very, like much to his marketing of why CM Punk is CM Punk. Because if he can't talk, he's like, you know, what does he really have, basically, right, to some people? So
if you remember that was sort of the threat of Solo Sokoa against John Cena, although we never really got to see the effects of it for too long.
Yeah, I don't know. John Cena had like a one promo where he was kind of losing it, whatever. But no, yeah, I thought like, yeah, something like that should have, you know, gone down with CM Punk. But I got to say, I'm invested into this. I think Drew McIntyre is probably one of the best fleshed out characters right now in it. And one more thing before I go. I'll say, listen, I personally don't care about the AEW ratings. If the show's going to do what it's going to do. I thought this past week's show, I watched it on delay because I was watching the Kendrick Lamar thing, whatever, right? But I actually liked the show a lot, actually. I thought Ospreay versus Swerve was what I actually wanted, the Venom. And now you got to wonder. Anyway, by the way, did you guys know, and I'll get your thoughts off the air about this, but did you notice when Swerve said, like, oh, I have no friends. Do you think Nana is going to take exception in that? Because that was kind of like, I have no friends. I got rid of them all. While Ospreay was also kind of alienating Callis by saying he doesn't need a family. So, again, like, you know, like Pollock pointed out, like, it's good to know that you're not going to know who's going to win this. So I actually, like, in my head, I'm like, how many scenarios can I do? Plus, like, the wild card stuff as well, right? So I'm taking consideration. So I'm actually amplified for this build between Swerve and Ospreay, because I legit don't know who's going to win, and I actually don't mind not knowing who's going to win for once. You know what I mean? So I'll see your thoughts off the air, but thank you for having my taking my call. Great programming as always, as usual. Peace out, guys.
Have a good weekend, Hansi.
Thank you, Hansi. I think Hansi's suggesting whether or not Nana would turn on Swerve. It's totally possible, but part of me also feels like if they were going to have Nana turn on Swerve, they would have already done it before he came back and have him join up with the Cage of Agony that I think could use him way more than Swerve can. But the fact that he hasn't tells me that I think they do really like Swerve and Nana as a package, as a babyface package, and I don't think that they would at this point entertain, at least yet, the idea of splitting them.
He's an important part of the presentation. I'm not saying there's not a time you could entertain that. I certainly would not want to be taking him away to put him with Cage of Agony. Certainly if you were him. But yeah, I mean, it's something you can look at as long as there's like a solid reason to do it. And I think you would, because it's a great part of the act, and he comes out and it's like he can do the dance while Swerve is can just, you know, do his entrance, and it works really well.
Let's go up next to Muggin. Welcome, Muggin.
Where in God's name is Muggin? Oh my goodness.
Oh, you're muted too.
You're muted, Muggin.
Oh my God.
Man, have you had your jaw on the floor since 10 o'clock?
Look, listen, I'm not gonna lie, okay? I'm a grown man, and my voice went up a couple octaves when I saw Jacob Fatu show up. Mm-hmm. It was fucking crazy. Yeah. And ironically, and coincidentally enough, there's a full moon tonight.
Crazy. They were waiting.
Howling.
For this.
You're howling at it.
Oh my goodness! Like, I mean, this episode of SmackDown was top to bottom. It was just fucking baller. I mean, you started off hot with Punk and Heyman. You teased that, and then you ended with Jacob Fatu joining the Bloodline. It was just, yeah, it was, and everything else between was solid too. But like, I mean, like, the two things everybody's gonna remember are the beginning and the end, and those two hit it out of the park. And also in the middle, I knew it was plain as day that when Drew McIntyre quit. Yeah, it was. I wasn't buying that because, you know, he got it back in blood against Punk.
Here's a question. So I feel like more weeks than not, especially after WrestleMania, we've been maybe complaining about the lack of star power on, or at least like the quality of a SmackDown compared to Raw. Tonight, yeah. I felt like, at least in terms of star power, it felt a lot more consistent. You had Cody, of course. You had CM Punk on the show. You had a big, you know, angle to close off the show. Would you be in favor, Muggin, of like having a CM Punk move over to a SmackDown to kind of tip those scales a little bit more in SmackDown's favor?
Yeah, well, I mean, well, if you move Punk over to SmackDown right now, I mean, that would just leave Drew with nothing to do, because I feel like, you know, that needs to happen. And of course, and on top of that too, like, I mean, I was kind of hoping that Punk would, like, you know, give, you know, break the news that he got the green light, but, you know, they're saving that because of what happened with Drew. And I thought that angle with Drew was tremendous. That's because, you know, they don't show you what happened, but like, it was very Hitchcockian in a way. They show you the aftermath of that, because and that left it to the viewer's imagination of how gruesome it would have been had they shown it all and all and had they shown it off the beat down in detail.
Yeah.
But that being said, Punk should stay on Raw, because that story with Drew needs to continue. And but on top of that, like, I mean, this entire week, like, you know, this entire week on both shows, got a much needed jolt to star power with Rollins coming back and Jacob Fatu showing up at the end of the SmackDown. It's just like, you know, the shit is firing all cylinders.
Thank you very much, Muggin. Appreciate the call.
Thank you.
The satisfied viewer tonight is Muggin.
Let's go lastly on the phone calls to Brandon from New Jersey. Welcome, Brandon.
Hey, what's going on, man?
What happened
to Michael Hearn?
I was following his Instagram. I thought there was going to be like trips of videos of him in Japan, but no, it was his son graduating kindergarten. So I guess he's not going to the trip. It's a bummer.
Is that really what happened?
The guy who trained Billy Gunn and Big Show is not showing up. I guess he didn't change his mind.
Are you going to be watching this Bushido event?
You got a stream I can borrow? Nope. NordVPN, right? Yeah. Let's go.
That doesn't get you free shows. You start to pay for them.
Be careful. Triller might send Jason Priestley out to hit you up for any money that you're owing them.
Yeah, the leg breaker.
Brandon's a big 90210 viewer.
Oh, no doubt, man. Come on, dude. Who was it? Come on. Remember when Dylan McKay's father got wiped out in the car? Come on. I'll never forget. Wasn't his dad in massive gambling debts or something like that on the show? I don't know.
Things faded when he came back to life.
Yes. I mean, he's like Chad Gable. We all thought he was dead, and now all of a sudden he's cleared the wrestling and Money in the Bank all of a sudden by Adam Page. Adam Pierce. What's his catchphrase? This I command. Or anyway,
this I command.
Doesn't he have a catchphrase? I don't know.
What did you want to call talk about on this?
I know. Let's get to brass tacks. I love the Rewind Away this week. Tremendous. The album, I've never even heard of that album before. From The Undertaker to the Bret Hart divorce letter. Unbelievable stuff.
The Undertaker divorce letter.
No, the Bret Hart divorce letter.
Oh, the Bret Hart divorce letter.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a weird Bret Hart song, and he was apologizing for something. I don't know.
Well, if you read his book, you would understand his. He had his proclivities on the road.
Yeah, he was no Ricky Steamboat. He was no father figure.
You know, he.
It was a great episode.
Thank you for listening.
Thank you. You helped me a lot today in the heat of 100-degree weather with that Rewind Away. Yeah, do you think Jacob Fatu is a little too excited tonight?
Wouldn't you be?
I mean, sure, but oh my God, he...
You're moving right up to the main roster, making a main roster paycheck. Are you kidding me? I'd be making werewolf faces too, like this.
If I was Solo Sikoa, I'd be like, wow, he could be Solo Sikoa, this guy. He looked impressive, but I'd never even seen him wrestle before. The man's incredible looking.
This is Brandon after his coworker gives him shit.
You're damn right, man. Can't fuck with it. Fuck around and find out, right?
All right.
Anyway.
Way is very tired, Brandon. We've got to cut this one short.
I know. Love you guys. Have a great weekend. Good night, man. All right,
goodbye.
Later. See ya.
Goodbye. Okay, that was Brandon from New Jersey.
Yes.
Post Wrestling Cafe constant. All right.
Yes. All right. He's kind of like the Wyatt family angle for our listeners. Some love, sure. Some hate.
Do you want to go through some feedback from forum.postwrestling.com, John?
If it's good, let's see. Jermaine from Chicago. Always like to hear from Jermaine. Rich fan's mortal enemy. We love us some CM Punk. This SmackDown was better this week. Yeah, Jermaine should have been in his glory when he heard Roman's never coming back. He says the added star power of Drew and Punk helped. Usually the wrestler towers over the GM, but Nick Aldis is just as big as Drew. Does Andrade have to forfeit his speed title if he wins the SmackDown Championship? I knew that Randy wasn't going to win tonight because he can't handle a ladder match. This new dude, Jacob Fatu, looks like the most credible out of the group. I'm happy they added him. Question for you two. Do you think that when Raw goes to Netflix that we will get a less restrictive show as far as profanity and tone? I think already they are pushing like their previous boundaries in terms of more blood. I think that like you get like Braun Strowman is like his tagline is now like the big son of a bitch. I think you're going to get plenty of that even before they move. Like that is not as though USA is clamping down on them. Like it's pretty much self-imposed by WWE and they can go
forever. For advertising purposes.
Yes. Like yeah. They're like they can change yeah. as they want. And I think you've seen that tone, like the seriousness of like angles that they're doing.
The blood use.
Like, mm-hmm. So to get to your question, like, yeah, I think like they, I don't think they want to go full on like 1999, but I think they want to, you know, push things when necessary without it being, repetitive or just, like you're numb to it. I don't think like, what AEW got into that trap of just like everybody swears on promos and it just lost its effectiveness really quick.
Yeah. I don't think you're going to like all of a sudden like hear F bombs, you know, being dropped when the TV show moves to Netflix. But I think they'll have the freedom to do it if it means that it helps emphasize, you know, a certain character or a certain segment perhaps. But I see them still sticking to like, I think that whatever like mandates they have internally, you know, whether it be for their own advertising, like let's also remember, even if a show is on Netflix, I believe they still like the program still adhere to a certain rating within Netflix. Right. So there's that as well. All right, let's go to Jake from the Windy City, who had a fantastic time being there live tonight. Punk and Heyman's opening segment was unexpected, but brought back some very nice memories from their time together a decade ago. All three Money in the Bank qualifiers were entertaining, and the continued stories delivered as well. Both Drew and Logan were the two most hated guys in Chicago from my hearing tonight. Crazy ending, and finally happy to see Jacob Fatu debuting as newest member of the Bloodline. Do Cody Orton and Owens need an additional person to combat them as well? Fun SmackDown and added to the heat wave we've had down here this week, as he shows a photo from his vantage point. What do you think? Do you think they add a fourth member to oppose the new Bloodline?
I mean, it's possible. You know, I thought they were going to just go in this direction of a six-man, which they still could at the moment, but you do now have the option if you wanted to add a fourth.
And who would that be?
I mean, who comes to mind off the top of your head? Is there anyone like ready to come back or someone that we're not thinking of that's obvious that has a connection to?
I mean, I'm sure there is. I'm sure chat room will let us know. But I could also see them doing 3-on-3 with either Solo being the person just standing outside or Jacob Fatu being the fourth member on the outside. Yeah.
All right. Last one here goes to Matthew. Flew from Nashville to Chicago yesterday for this show, and it did not disappoint. I really enjoyed it live. It was worth it. The CM Punk pop in Chicago is something else to behold. I was a little surprised to see Drew so soon. I thought he might be taking some time off. I'm assuming Punk isn't cleared yet, being how he didn't get physical on the show. Heyman is an absolute legend when it comes to being on camera. I'm really enjoying SmackDown as a whole right now. It keeps getting better. Well, yes, seemed to be a very satisfying show tonight from most watching mm-hmm. SmackDown from Chicago. And they're going to have another big crowd next week at Madison Square Garden. So that is coming up. And
Slim Sieber bringing up Jimmy Uso. Do we know his status? Is he just...
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Jimmy is... that seemed very quick to just usher him back. Like we have two more episodes before the Money in the Bank show. So, I mean... Yeah, that's someone. I mean, I don't think there's any...
He's injured right now, according to Fightful. So I don't know if that writes him off. We also don't know what the injury is. So, yeah, interesting.
I would also think that would be really soon to have him not just coming back, but opposing the Bloodline so quickly for like an 8-man. I'm not as crazy about that idea. Okay, well, there you go. Saturday night, Collision Course will be up at postwrestlingcafe.com with John Cena and Kate from Montreal. And don't take my word for it. Listen to all the feedback we just got about this week's Rewind Away with Wei Ting, Nate Milton, and Chris from LA spinning the tracks of WrestleMania, the album, and giving their unique analysis of each one track by track. They've got me interested now in this Bret Hart. Never the right time to say goodbye. Is this legit about like a relationship ending, or is that your
Well, it's up to interpretation. I mean,
I see.
It is a ballad from Bret the Hitman Hart singing about, you know, having to leave a love unspecified as to whom. He was married at the time and continued to be after
The
this.
Undertaker, the Man in Black. So none of these are not theme songs. These are like original songs.
No, the closest thing you'd have is the Big Boss Man's Hard Times, which is like a remake of his theme. and the rest are incredibly obnoxious, inspired by, sometimes featuring songs based off of these characters.
How did they come up with that title for Tatanka's song?
Tatanka Native American? I'm really not sure. That was really out of nowhere. Yeah.
Okay. Well, look out for that Nasty Boy Stomp.
Yeah, I'll send you a link, John. You can listen to the whole album on YouTube.
I'm not going to listen to the album. I'll listen to your show. But sounds yeah. And if you so want to go down the path, they have also reviewed Slam Jam and what was the other WCW
Christmas Brawl, which is like an album that I don't think anybody owns, but features quite the collection of WCW theme music. Hey, 2 weeks from now we'll be talking about WrestleMania 9, so we're sticking in 1993, and we'll be talking about my first WrestleMania that I've ever seen.
Okay. Yeah. With the Toga Party in Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, look out for that. WrestleMania 9 coming up in 2 weeks' time on the Post Wrestling Cafe. All right. Have a great weekend, folks, and we will speak with you on Monday night.